We'll move on to other business here. Item number 170.
Accept Portland Streetcar second annual report.
Commissioner Novick.
Colleagues, this is the second annual report to Council by Portland Streetcar on its performance, operations, and budget, and it includes exciting new data on streetcar ridership and the city's return on its investment. As you know, the streetcar is owned and operated by the city in a strong partnership with TriMet, our regional transit agency, and an operations assistance provider, Portland Streetcar Inc., which engages private sector stakeholders through a voluntary board, staffs our citizen advisory committee, develops sponsorships, and advocates for transit service improvements. Here today are the illustrious Jim Mark, the chair of PSI, Dan Bauer, the illustrious executive director of PSI, and our own illustrious Catherine Levine, the Bureau Streetcar Manager.
Well, we've lost our crowd.
Yeah. Hard act to follow.
We've got exciting things to talk about.
We're excited, so don't be dissuaded. Good morning.
Good morning, Commissioner, Mayor. We're very pleased today to bring to Council the second annual report with data from the ridership survey and the recent economic development analysis. Dan Bauer of PSI will be providing more information about those two items shortly. I wanted to acknowledge that over the past year, Portland Streetcar has continued to grow and mature. With the opening of the Tillicum Crossing and the full loop service, there are now nearly 100 people who work at Portland Streetcar to provide public transit service 7 days a week, addressing customer needs and safety. They are led by the City Operations Manager, Lenore DeLuisa, and the City Maintenance Manager, Gary Cooper. And I happen to know that Lenore was here.
Yes, she's here.
You want to stand up a moment? Okay, thank you. As you know, last September, we entered into a new operation services agreement with Portland Streetcar, Inc. to clarify our relationship, assign responsibilities, and set financial targets for sponsorship revenue to support service delivery. That is certainly one of the accomplishments we are proud of. But I also think it's more important to talk about what the team has done in this past year, which is focus on improved reliability, better communications with our customers, developing the Portland Streetcar strategic plan, and focusing on safety and security in coordination with our partners, TriMet, federal, and state. Streetcar staff have participated in tabletop exercises with Homeland Security and TriMet. They have coordinated with the transit police, and we've added additional security at the streetcar site. We all share the goal of continuous safety improvements for our employees and our customers. Dan will be telling you more about the results of some of those efforts. I'll turn it over to him now.
Thank you. Would you mind turning that so I could see? So as Catherine noted, this was a tremendous year for us. Obviously, we had some major changes with the opening of the Tillicum Crossing and new service going into effect. But by far, the biggest and most controversial thing we did was to change our logo. We expect this new logo to bring in roughly 3,000 riders per year. Which should be noted that we worked that through the Citizens Advisory Committee, through the board, with a lot of our partners at TriMet, and launched it, and somehow we won an award in New York City for best logo for travel and lodging. We beat out Airbnb. So there you go.
Wow.
Just a quick recap of the service. Right now we have essentially what I call two and a half or three lines. We have the north-south line, which is the green line from Northwest 23rd to South Waterfront, and then we have the A and B loops, which are, depending on who you ask, essentially the same line or different lines, because they never actually run on the same tracks, and they go in different directions. We worked through the summer to come up with names for these things, inner or outer loops, timbers and thorns loops, all kinds of things, and we landed on A and B loop. So the A loop goes clockwise, the B loop goes counterclockwise. All three lines run at 15-minute service, and what that means downtown between the Broadway Bridge and the Tillicum Crossing is we have service every 7.5 minutes, which is about where roughly 80% of our ridership is served with that. We have 15,200 riders per day, which is exactly the same as the yellow line max. It's better than every bus line in the city but for two. So the ridership on streetcar is really quite tremendous right now. We showed this slide last year, but just a reminder of how we've grown over time. Again, one of the fun things for us is we have partners. We now have seven, almost eight partners in the city or in the country running modern streetcar systems. Washington, D.C. is, after 8 to 10 years of trying, is going to be opening their system on Saturday. They're using the cars built right here in Oregon. So that's an exciting opportunity for us to see how that goes. Jim and I are headed to Kansas City in early April to see the grand opening of the Kansas City streetcar, and then look forward to Cincinnati opening this fall as well. So a couple of accomplishments for the year. Somewhere in the budget process there, between the spring bump and the annual budget, this group gave us a little bit of money to speed up the streetcar and improve reliability. And I wanted to just highlight a couple of the things we've done there. One was to improve a signal at Southwest 4th and Harrison. At one point, we could only move one train across that intersection at a time. With roughly $30,000 or $40,000, we were able to make that fix and move two trains through that intersection at the same time. And that has really improved our reliability through that section. We also put new striping on 10th and 11th Avenue, Southwest 10th and 11th. This is what we call a business access and transit lane, or a BAT lane. It allows cars to turn right, but the streetcar can proceed through. And what that does is allow us to better serve our platforms, so we less frequently have cars in front of us as we get to platforms in that area. We also fixed a switch at 16th and Lovejoy, and fixed some track work at 10th and Market, and we did some analysis of other ways to speed up the streetcar, and we can talk a little bit more about that in a second. So what that's done for reliability, it has improved our on-time performance. This chart on the left shows our on-time performance. The green is on-time, yellow is early, and purple is late. Our overall on-time performance for the whole system is about 81%, but you can see two of the lines, the A loop and the NS, are running really quite well, 85% on-time and even roughly 8% early. And 8% early is a management problem, not a infrastructure problem. So we're doing quite well on those lines. But I want to flag that the B loop, which is the counterclockwise loop at PM peak, is routinely running into traffic at Grand and Davis and at Broadway and Vancouver, which are I-5 and I-84 on ramps. So that's why our on-time performance for the B loop is sagging. It's that 3 to 6 p.m. Infrastructure problem there. Another big success, the reduction in crashes. This year we had a 36% reduction in crashes across the system, which is fantastic. What that means is we're no longer having to cut service because trains are not available to us. We have only three spare trains. So when we have a crash, that has a really tough impact on our system. So that's been a great reduction.
Can I ask you a question about crashes?
Yeah.
Who is, in terms of the profile of a crash involving the streetcar, how often is it the result of someone who, for example, parks in a way that creates no lane for the streetcar, or cuts off a streetcar, or drives in some way that's dangerous versus, let's say, driver error? Do you keep track of that?
Yeah, we do. The report we publish has... I'm sorry. We do publish an annual report that lists out all the crash types. We get a lot of near misses and people striking us from the center lane trying to turn right. We get a few rear-end crashes where the person in front of us comes to a sudden stop. We don't clip that many mirrors, not that many parking, but most of them tend to be cars that are swaying outside their lane.
My sense, for what it's worth, is that the streetcar is going slow enough that I think the bigger risk they have is cars cutting them off and driving erratically, and not so much the streetcar. I think sometimes people forget that the streetcar is a big, heavy, dangerous vehicle, and
you
ought to drive more cautiously.
You know, 70,000 hours of service last year and only 30 crashes is pretty remarkable.
Pretty good.
Yeah. Another investment we made last year was in automatic passenger counters. This allows us to know exactly how many people are riding our system. This is a pretty major investment for us. But it's given us some really great data. So this shows you our monthly ridership, and you can see over the summer we took a massive hit because the Broadway Bridge was closed and we were completely unable to run streetcar on the east side of the river. And it has taken us up until this month to actually recover our ridership, so back to 15,000 riders a day. What that looks like for us on an hourly basis, this is kind of an interesting chart that shows how many people are boarding and getting off our streetcar every hour of the day. I roughly drew a a red line on there that shows what a normal transit service would experience, which is a small AM peak, and then a big dip, and then a large PM peak. What we see is a peak from roughly 11 to 6, people moving about the city and just doing any number of activities. But it's a little bit different from a normal transit system in that regard. And I think the temptation there is to think that people are getting downtown, using streetcar to run an errand, and then leaving downtown. But what we know from new survey data is that 66% of our trips are beginning at people's homes. They're walking out their front door, they're getting on the streetcar, they're riding it for 1.1 miles, and they're going to work. 32% of our passengers are going to work, which is the number one destination. We also have students, and then we have just people doing any number of other activities. But I found this particularly surprising that we have so many people walking out their door and completing their trip on streetcar going to work. It's kind of different than the narrative that has been out there in the community for a while. Some demographics from this survey, and I'm happy to divulge you with the methodology here, but I'd rather not bore you with that. This was in partnership with the FTA and TriMet. We collected this data. It was a very robust survey. Probably the most boring chart on there is the ridership age. That actually matches the census data almost to a T.
I thought that was the most interesting thing in the report.
Yeah.
I wonder if there's any other mode split that so closely matches the census.
What I think we'll see with this data is that the people riding the streetcar are the people who live next to streetcar. So there's no shiny unicorn out there that's using this in a way that's different than we would.
Very broad range of ages.
Yeah.
I'm really impressed.
Yeah.
Everybody uses streetcar.
Yeah. I think we all found these numbers to be kind of interesting, but it's a different narrative than it's been out there.
Yeah.
Similarly, 38% of our riders don't have vehicles, and confusingly but interestingly, 38% of the households along the streetcar line are households without a car. So those are two different stats that happen to match up perfectly. Less than 5% of our riders are tourists, and again, quite a few of our riders are earning less than $20,000 per year. Along those lines, 23% of our riders don't have a driver's license. And interestingly for me, we deploy our ADA ramps at a rate more than five times that of TriMet. So we are carrying a lot of people in mobility devices, a lot of people with shopping carts. Not every one of these is a wheelchair. A lot of these are people shopping and having using their carts to get their groceries onto the streetcar. But still, that's what we're seeing a lot of that.
One of my favorite photos is someone with a beer cake on the streetcar. On a hand truck.
Good thing
we have that ramp.
Data like whether riders have driver's licenses or not, or much less valid driver's licenses, how do you track that?
So I didn't want to get too far in the methodology, but we partnered with TriMet and FTA to develop a pre and post survey associated with the federal grant that paid for the East Side Streetcar Project. We used electronic tablets and collected, I think, roughly 6,000 samples that were representative of when people were riding and where they were riding. So that was a one-time, all of this data is a one-time snapshot that was taken roughly in April and May of last year.
Statistically valid survey protocol you use to get this data, and
right.
It's a snapshot in time.
And this was by far the largest survey we've ever done, and it's only been done once. So we would like to repeat it, but it costs quite a bit of money to do a survey. Okay, moving on. So obviously we're using streetcars as a planning tool as well. The other major study we did this year was in partnership with TriMet and the FTA, was an analysis of the economic impact of a streetcar. And what we did was we hired Eco Northwest to look at both what's happened, just generally what can we see on the ground, but also what was the causality of streetcar, to what extent did streetcar actually influence decisions. And there's a full report we can share with people on this, but I just wanted to share a few highlights with you. One thing we found is there's now $4.5 billion worth of investment along the streetcar line. This is within a quarter of a mile. The real market value of the streetcar corridor has increased over $11 billion. And that actually, what you see there is a concentration of growth in the city. So we used to have 11% of the real market value of the city along the streetcar line. Now it's 17. So more stuff is being invested along that line. Excuse me, I thought I had hid this slide. One second here. Oh, you know what? I think we have the wrong presentation, but that's okay. We can go with it. There's been a ton of housing built along the streetcar line, but One thing that's often lost is we think at least 30%, but definitely quantifiable 25% of all the housing units built along the streetcar line are subsidized affordable housing. I'm going to take 1 second and is that thumb drive still there? Okay. Oh, it's close. All right, never mind. It's fine. It's all right. We'll go with it. Yep. It's fine. It's close enough. Another interesting stat is that people who are investing along the streetcar line are using more of their FAR, their floor area ratio. So we know that 41% of the people who are investing are using at least 80% of their FAR. So you're seeing more people take more advantage of their zoning capacity along the streetcar line than you are off of the streetcar line.
So just to translate that into English, that means that people who are developing along the streetcar are making sure they have the biggest office building housing units that they can because it's worth the investment?
Correct. Correct. 33% of all the jobs in the city are located within a quarter mile of the streetcar line. A lot of that has to do with the fact of where we run, but again, you're seeing a concentration of investment. And we did this analysis, which the FTA called heads and shoulders above anything they've ever seen, at probably the worst possible time. There was not literally a single unit or square foot built on the east side during the pre and post analysis that we did. From 2010 to 2013, almost nothing happened. But we all know now things are picking up. This analysis doesn't include anything on Haslow and 8th project. It doesn't include Burnside Bridgehead project. It doesn't include any of the development that's occurring today on the east side. So we look forward to updating this at that time.
So before you move to that, it doesn't include anything about the economic value of actually building the streetcar during the recession, right? The jobs.
None of the construction.
The construction jobs that we kept in Portland that provided good family wage jobs over the course of the recession.
Yeah, that's accurate. Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Commissioner, because I think some people have had amnesia about some of the projects we jump-started 2009, 10, and 11 that were designed to, they were effectively stimulus jobs, whether they were parks, affordable housing, or other things, and they were very important, and they were important as catalytic investments as well. And we seem to have forgotten that we've just passed through the Great Recession. So.
Now, just flag for this analysis. There's a whole other piece to this, which was like a regression analysis or hedonic analysis that attaches the likelihood or the causality of streetcar creating change in the city. And it's just one of those things that's far too complicated to explain at City Council. But that report exists. We've been presenting it around town and happy to share that with people if you'd like. A couple other quick items just in terms of what's next for streetcar. We are looking for more cars. More cars would improve our service and our reliability. And we did make an application to the state for Connect Oregon to try and buy 3 used streetcars from Seattle. We got points for creativity in that one, but didn't score that well. I think we scored okay. But we're still hopeful that we can find a way to get those streetcars. That would be $5 million for 3 new streetcars, which is roughly the price of one. So we're still trying to make that work.
Dan, I think the appropriate phrase is certified pre-owned streetcars.
Certified pre-owned. The blue book is still out on the
call. See them today. They can't save any money.
Can I just add the rural transit agencies were especially appreciative of the city's willingness to, as they say, go out of the box and look at used vehicles. And they pointed out a number of different folks at the state level pointed out their appreciation for the good stewardship of taxpayer dollars within the state in moving that forward. I think the ranking uncertainty for them is that we would be looking to buy surplus vehicles. In other words, there's no certainty that we would win the bid. And at the state level, it's tremendously important to the folks who are looking at the grant applications to know that if they award you the grant, you will for sure be able to expend the dollars.
Forgive me for asking this, but I know that, you know, every year there's a great ritual at the Fire Bureau where Dan gives a vehicle that's gone past its useful life to the Guadalajara Bomberos, and they come up and they then drive it down I-5. It's because under our standards, it's gone beyond the useful life, but for them, it still has a use. So when we're picking up a used streetcar from Seattle, there are no wear and tear, safety, other kinds of considerations?
No, we're not. They're not for sale because they're beyond useful life. They're for sale because Seattle is moving to a system where they have to run off wire. Because they have so many wires in Seattle, they have to run about a mile with the pantograph down. And so these streetcars that are just like ours, in fact, they bought them off our contract, are no longer useful in Seattle.
That's important information.
Yeah, right.
They're, what, 10 years old, 9 years old?
Yeah, it's almost like they're surplus versus aging out.
Yeah.
But there's some conversion necessary.
Yeah. We have to take their sponsorship off the side. Okay, moving on. yes, absolutely. Another thing that's happening right now, you may have heard about, we have closed temporarily 5 of our streetcar stations. The 2 at Everett, the 2 at First and Harrison, and the 1 at Southwest 10th and Stark. The hope there is to both improve safety. Southwest 10th and Stark and First and Harrison are the prime locations of what we talked about earlier with cars turning in front of us. But also trying to speed the system up quite a bit. We hear a lot from both riders, but also non-riders, that the system needs to be more useful. And if you're traveling from Northwest Portland to South Waterfront, that's a long trip. And we're trying to figure out ways to speed this up. This trial is going pretty well. I would think we've received a not insignificant amount of pushback, but not a surprising amount either, and also have received quite a few positive comments, more than I've experienced in most projects. So we look forward to wrapping that trial up at the end of this month and making a recommendation through the board at that time. We're also looking at alternatives for speeding us up on the east side. We talked about the service with the B-loop. We have a couple of spots where we get stuck every single day for a long time, and we need to be thinking about ways to keep the streetcar moving through that corridor. We're also looking at a place to turn around on the east side, probably around Grand and Weidler, right by the McDonald's there. If we were able to turn a streetcar around at that point, we would be able to recover service on days when the bridge is closed or we have bridge lifts or anything else that's affecting our service. And then from a planning perspective, we're embarking on an effort to kind of dust off the 2009 streetcar concept plan. We have this plan out there that was adopted by council. People know it exists, but there's a lot of anxiety in the community about, are we actually doing things? Are we actually going to build them? I have developers calling me all the time saying, look, I need to know where to put my PGE vault. And I see on this plan that you're building a streetcar here. Is that true or is that not true? And that's like a baseline question. But there's also questions in the community about where we're going from here. So we're, as a board, embarking on an effort to try and identify a series of investments that we think could double ridership from 20,000 to 40,000 riders with pretty minimal investment. It always sounds expensive to talk streetcar. We think roughly $300-400 million you could double the network. But compared to $1.6 billion for the Orange Line or anything else, there are other ways we can be talking about this as a way of shaping our community and being consistent with the comprehensive plan. I heard your comments yesterday about Foster. I have not been at my desk since then. Otherwise, this map would have Foster on it.
Just about to ask that, because there was kind of a glaring hole in Southeast.
And this is just a representative picture. But people should know that in partnership with TriMet and the city, PSI is working on efforts to clarify where we're going next. And I think that'll be an important conversation.
Given what you've just told us, and before you move on, because I really appreciate having that map, and thank you for saying that you're going to consider Foster, since we know now that it does do what Charlie and others said it was going to do when the system was first conceived in stimulating both homes and businesses nearby, you could just see how putting it down Foster and then up 122nd might do what other strategies haven't been able to do in those areas in stimulating vibrancy and great places to live and work. Although those are good places to live and work now, they could be even better with streetcar.
Yeah, I mean, genuinely, the conversation is going to be around value capture. And now that we know that you can create value, how are we as a city capturing that value and deploying it? Is it going towards the streetcar? Is it going towards affordable housing, jobs? We need some other tool to kind of capture all that value that's going to be created.
Can we have both?
With $4.5 billion, I would think yes. Yeah. So I want to hand it to Jim for some closing remarks.
Sure. I'm Jim Mark, chair of Portland Streetcar Inc., and you know, streetcar's been near and dear to me since the day the real city really went after it, and I think it's really shaped the city of Portland. And I want to thank Dan and Catherine, I mean, and all of the people that work on streetcar. Sort of my opportunity to thank the people that make me look good as chair of streetcar, but all our maintenance workers, our drivers, all the crews that work so hard to keep it safety. And Commissioner Fish, I appreciate your questions about safety because there's a lot of people that work every day, not only to make the line safe, but also to analyze where we aren't safe and where there are improvements that can be made along the line. And those people work very hard. And then last but not least, Commissioner Novick, who's worked really hard with us over the years, and I appreciate our relationship and the opportunity to work with you on transportation and the streetcar. This has been a great year. I mean, as I mentioned, we've got a great staff. Dan has done a great job. The city's done a great job, but we have our contract that we signed, you know, that we went through and I think addressed a lot of the issues that came out of the audit from before. So we're off and running. And as Dan mentioned, there's a lot of improvements that, you know, we're looking at and enhancements over a period of time, and we'll reach out to the city on numerous areas that the streetcar could be moved to. A couple things I thought I'd go over of the year of accomplishments, and I'm going to go through them very briefly and have, you know, feel free to ask questions along. PSI was responsible for privately fundraising for all the Tillicum Crossing and the Loop grand celebrations. That was all done by PSI. We hit a new high for private sponsorship on the streetcar, over $400,000 last year, and that continues to grow. We continue to get more interest from the private community on private sponsorship on the streetcar.
Is that an annual number?
That's annual. So it's really been growing. PSI's privately fundraising to replace the glass at all the streetcar shelters with etched glass to make it more attractive and sort of manage the graffiti efforts that we all have a tough time keeping up with. And the board's been very active along the fare policy, station consolidations, as Dan talked about, and then planning for the future. We're really engaging not only this board, but breaking into different subcommittees and reaching out to the city and the citizen participation boards. You know, it's important that we sort of look at the next phase of streetcar, of what it's going to do and how it's going to shape the city. I think Commissioner Fritz mentioned these are important times. So as we look at different areas, I think we have to think very carefully of where that line's going to go and the impact and effect that we can have within the city to increase mobility. And then finally, you know, the comp plan, which goes hand in hand with that of accomplishing our goals. I think when you look at successful cities, not only in the United States, but around the world, streetcar is an interconnector. And again, it's my pleasure to act as chair. I've really enjoyed the process and look forward to working on the future. Thanks for the opportunity.
Great report. Thank you. Questions?
I just have a question. In partnership with Google, New York City is putting out these kiosks that are going to create universal Wi-Fi. And Google is funding it. And it's going to be offset with the advertising. Do we have opportunities going forward to link Wi-Fi to streetcar, either at the stations or somehow in the system? And would that, you may already have it, and if not, does that give us another advantage in the marketplace?
Yep. The short answer is yes, we can. We have data. We have cellular data going to our stations. We have cell data going to our cars. Technically, this is not that hard of a problem, just getting routers installed at those places. We also are in the grant application for Connected Cities. Is that what it's called?
Smart Cities.
Smart Cities, yeah. This question keeps coming up ever since I've started 2 years ago. Shouldn't we have Wi-Fi on the streetcars, and shouldn't we have them at the stations? And I think the short answer to me is yes, but if I had $200,000 to spend, I'd rather buy security cameras for our cars.
A thought. The company that Commissioner Novick has selected to run our bike share program is actually involved indirectly with the New York City free Wi-Fi plan.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
The Wi-Fi kiosks they're putting out in New York are at no cost to local government. It's paid for exclusively by advertising.
Are you suggesting we should allow advertising in the right of way?
Well, okay. What I'm suggesting is there are new models for how to get Wi-Fi, and I think I would offer it as something to look at. Because if there was a partner like a Google or someone that wanted to bring it, I think it would be actually pretty neat that you had that service on streetcar and at your stations.
Yeah, and I have been in conversations with the bike share group because they're also going to have multiple locations where there could be a router. So I think there's an opportunity there for sure. Yeah.
So I have a couple of questions, sort of starting with a comment. I mean, back to our discussion about the bat lanes on business access and transportation lanes on 10th and 11th, which the council funded last year and which you implemented and about which we got very little complaint. Given that you're now carrying 15,000 riders a day, I'm going to dare to speak its name, which is we ought to continue to prioritize the function of the streetcar over the convenience of individual motor vehicles. So where should we do that next in order to keep you running on time in a city that's going to have more cars in it? Because if we're not aggressive about that, you will gradually walk backwards as you get choked off by traffic. And if we're serious about transit and if we're serious about our carbon footprint, then we've got to be serious about prioritizing scarce public right-of-way for travel decisions that accommodate more people in more sustainable ways. So where next? Should we stripe lanes, change signals, otherwise shift the balance in favor of a community solution to transportation that's carrying far more people than cars ever could?
My general sense is on the west side, traffic has not been that big of an issue to date. It's manageable. The two places where we have the biggest issue by far, and we're talking delays of 30, 40, 50 minutes, is Northeast Grand at Davis and Broadway at Vancouver. My hope is that with a $400 million Northeast Quadrant plan to redesign I-5 and Vancouver and Williams and everything else that ODOT and the city are participating in, that if we're going to spend that much money, we could find a way to move the streetcar through that particular intersection better than we do today. That being said, I haven't seen that in those plans. The Grand and Davis one is a little different nut. We're sitting in line with cars trying to get on I-84. So there's something to be said about how we're managing Grand Avenue. Generally, you've got four lanes of traffic. Nowhere else in the city do we have four lanes of traffic. It's one of those opportunity areas. The rest of it, I think, is really manageable with signals at this point.
Well, you accomplished a lot on 10th and 11th yep. with paint and signs. So are you saying there's no solution to the Grand and Davis problem that doesn't involve tens of millions of dollars, and there's no solution to the Broadway problem that doesn't involve hundreds of millions of dollars?
I haven't seen one yet. Okay. How's that?
Harder. You're saying it's
yeah.
harder?
Yeah.
Okay. Lovejoy and Northrop becoming one way? Is that necessary?
Lovejoy is mostly one way at this point. Yeah. The Lovejoy ramp up to the Broadway Bridge, when the Broadway Bridge reopens, we tend to get stuck in queues there. You have a double left onto the Broadway Bridge. That's the spot we get stuck. Yeah. But worth exploring, for sure.
Well, the council's going to be considering a capital budget as usual yeah. in the course of this budget.
Yeah.
If there are the kinds of cost-effective solutions that you implemented on 10th and 11th that we could do to make the service work better for all the people it's serving and now going to serve, since you're going back up that ridership graph, let us know.
So I have to ask, did anybody think about this when we planned the East Side Line? I mean, those intersections have been notorious for decades. I'm just curious why we didn't think about putting the streetcar on the other side of Grand Avenue, for instance, or the other side of Broadway. Anybody think about that? Mm-hmm. I know this precedes your time there, but probably precedes all your time.
Okay. From what I've dug up, when the design was done, it was a different city. We have grown a lot, and our traffic has grown a lot since the East Side alignment was originally drawn. The models don't show nearly the kind of queuing that we're seeing, particularly at Grand, because at that time, freeway traffic was actually quite a bit lower than it is today. And we saw this in the modeling around the Columbia River crossing and everything else. There was a significant dip in the amount of cars traveling on the freeways. And at the time that was modeled and looked at, it seemed to work. But as we grow, we are putting more and more cars on the road, and more of those cars are trying to get on the freeway. there may be some opportunities to look at how we're doing. The other is the actual design of Broadway at Vancouver and Williams has changed since we opened. We now have the double right onto I-5 North and the bike signal. And what used to be a little bit different lane configuration that allowed for more through traffic on Broadway is now down to one and a half lanes getting through Broadway. So there's some things have changed.
Other questions? Thank you very much. Thank all of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anyone else want to speak on this report?
Crystal Ilinski signed up.
Okay, come on up.
Hello, my name is Crystal Ilinski. This is enlightening. I had a couple questions about the board for a streetcar. I understand it's not under the umbrella of TriMet. And since there have been so many changes to keep track of, where it concerns the MAX, I call it the yellow line south. I don't know why they changed the color. The bus, the major, major changes in the bus, and then reinstating what we had before with even more quirks and loss of memory. And then all of the streetcar, I was wondering, how do we follow this? If
Probably the Portland Streetcar Inc. website that he mentioned.
Is the board elected?
Appointed. It's a nonprofit.
Portland Streetcar Inc. is a nonprofit. It has a volunteer board of directors. They are a crucial source of recommendations to the city. The city also has a citizen advisory committee on streetcar that reports directly to the commissioner in charge.
Thanks. It sounds very different from TriMet. All right. Well, gone are the days where I sat there frustrated, wondering why we had a streetcar when it took you could walk faster than it ran, and the wait was not worth it. And just the sense of it going around in this one track when Sam Adams extended it down to the South Waterfront, it took a lot of people. I'll mention. My group of 10,000 to understand why suddenly the concentration over to a major brownfield of the city, which is now, as we can see in just a few years, a metropolis of its own. So sometimes the city planning follows the streetcar, follows the transit plans, and sometimes the other way around, just as Dan was mentioning how Broadway and the Cooch and Burnside couplet. I lived in those two areas. I lived at Burnside Sandy right before that couplet was built, and then I lived up at Broadway near the Rose Quarter Transit Center. And I get lost in those areas now. So I think at the time they were planning this, nobody except real estate developers and everybody in their business pockets was planning on this huge influx. It's hard to even navigate as a pedestrian, much less as someone trying to take a streetcar. So the problems we had with the streetcar in the beginning are what we see in other places that are trying to implement what Portland has, and hopefully they'll handle it much better than we have. I'll mention Phoenix and Tucson, where I have family and friends, and a lot of people just complain that it doesn't do anything except push gentrification. And I just wanted to say that I'm impressed when I sit there and wait and I see 2-3 streetcars coming one after another. I'm like, hey, this is how the whole city should be with buses and maxes.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Morning. To say, but.
Morning.
Good morning. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Watchdog PDX. In my opinion, the streetcar has been very effective. I think their management in place is by far superior than TriMet. And some of the concerns I might have on a safety issue, I'm glad you brought up the fact you have an actual counter to count how many people board the streetcar. one of the concerns I have, and I guess management can look into it, is that I have a concern on the overall capacity on how many people actually should be allowed to be on the streetcar at any time. And I was wondering, with your counter system, is that if that was set up to where at certain times it went over the capacity, it might notify the driver to not allow any more people to enter the streetcar. And I've had that same problem with the TriMet Max, is that I don't like these types of modes of transportation any more than a vehicle that someone may drive, having 10 people in a car, opposed to having too many people in the streetcar. It's a safety issue, and I think it needs to really be addressed, especially if there's wheelchairs in there, especially if there's people that get in there with bikes. There has to be a capacity and a limit that is allowed on these streetcars. And the fire marshal, I'd like to have a little more input from the fire marshal on that situation, on the overall capacity allowed, and make sure that is addressed. The other issues that I really am impressed with the streetcars, that when you're talking the valuation of properties along the streetcar route, it's very impressive on the overall numbers on what the values are going to. It appears that the developers are having more incentives to develop more units there, more residential, and we also noticed hotels and various other condos. And what I found interesting here is that you have a 5%, less than 5% of riders are tourists, and I find that kind of a difficult number to understand, considering I would think people coming into town would want to be next to the streetcar, and a lot of the hotels and new developments might be built there. So I find that number kind of interesting. Maybe I almost disagree with your less than 5%. And another issue I have is that we're talking potential competitors to the streetcar, such as Uber, Lyft. I want to see if we can't get them to pay a little bit more money toward the operations of the streetcar. Because in my opinion, they are in direct competition with the streetcar. And I think that needs to be addressed with Uber, Lyft. And we're going to be looking at the autonomous vehicles. And I wanted to bring in Google and Uber to actually address that situation and come in with their plan. And so I haven't seen anything like that on this. And the reason why I say that is I'm very nervous about any more future investments in streetcar without having Uber and Google stepping up to the table on their autonomous vehicles throughout the city. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Anyone else? Okay. Do we have a motion to accept the report?
So moved. Second.
Roll call, please.
Fritz. Fairless Square.
First, Commissioner Novi, thank you for bringing this report. I notice it's the second annual report, and it's certainly not just been 2 years since we've had the streetcar. I understand that it was you and your office who said, let's do a report. It's really important to do these reports because it shows how successful the program as a whole has been, and it gives information. I hope this presentation is posted online prominently or will be. I have, as of this morning, 537 emails urging me to do more on helping people who are experiencing homelessness. And we had a great presentation on A Home for Everyone. We do actually have a plan for how to do that, and we know exactly what it needs to be done. This report similarly shows why is the streetcar a benefit to everyone, and in particular, why is it a benefit to Portlanders? I actually don't find it difficult, Lightning, to believe that only 5% are tourists. It largely serves the places that people in Portland want to go, 66% of the trips beginning at home, and that shows the great development that's happened both in the Pearl and in South Waterfront of homes, and it takes us where we want to go. If I want to go to the convention center, I'm going to hop on the MEX because it's the most direct route, even though the streetcar does go there by a different route and encourages other people who aren't on the MEX line to be able to get to that destination. It's just phenomenal how much this project has both helped with jobs during the recession and is continuing to serve jobs and housing needs within our city. And I'm very grateful to the work of Portland Streetcar Inc. I'm particularly appreciative of the staff, the way that the staff in PBOT, Portland Department of Transportation, works with the streetcar and the streetcar board. very gracious when we're looking at a way to get people who will hopefully be housed or sheltered at 3rd and Harrison. We asked the streetcar if we could provide free passes for them to get to services, and the answer was sure. And when you look at the demographics of people who are using the streetcar, it is all ages, it is all incomes. It is a lot of people who have shopping carts of various varieties, whether it's groceries in the kind of appliance that I might use to get groceries to and from the store, or whether it's folks who are taking all of their stuff, that they are welcome on streetcar and that we are accommodating everybody. And that's the Portland way of doing things. Thank you, Commissioner Novick. Thank you, Mayor Hales, for helping to start this way back when you were commissioner. And again, thanks to Commissioner and then Mayor Adams for continuing the program when people said that that was not the right thing to do. It certainly was. Aye.
Fish?
And then impressive numbers on reduction in accidents. And I will say that on a number of the routes where I drive, I think the cars make it necessarily difficult for the operators, the way they jump in and out along the route. And so I'm surprised that there is as few accidents as has been reported. Appreciate the transparency and the presentation on the report, and I'm proud to vote aye.
Saltzman.
Well, thank you for this great report. I think it's really heartening to see the ridership numbers going up, and that squares well with what I see, particularly on the west side. It does seem like the cars are a lot more full than they have been. And I think South Waterfront has been an important destination in the mix. So it's a great report, and I also want to acknowledge Mayor Hills, who really did bring streetcar back to Portland. And I very vividly remember being on the first streetcar ride and Choo-choo Charlie walking alongside there with a big stogie in his mouth.
Yeah, got in trouble for that.
Anyway, it's great to see that this has become an integral part of our system of both development and also helping people get around. So please support it. Aye.
Novick?
Thanks again to Jim and Catherine and Dan for their work in this presentation and on the streetcar as the whole and to everybody associated with the streetcar. I think this demographic data on who uses the streetcar is extremely powerful. And I have to confess that a couple of years ago, there were times when I was feeling sorry for myself that I thought of the streetcar as primarily a club that Brad Schmidt could use to beat me with. but I think that this data demonstrating the breadth of Portlanders who use the streetcar means that we should now think of the streetcar as a weapon in the continuing fight against cynicism about government investments. Aye.
Hales.
Well, thank you, Commissioner Novick. Thank you all. This is a success story, and the report is illuminating, and I think it helps helps clarify what's really happening as opposed to sometimes what people think or, worse, is misreported as happening. The data that you've put in front of us affirms what I've believed for some time now, and I think it's now pretty clear in the numbers that this is the best investment the city of Portland has ever made. We made lots of good investments. Bull Run Water System was a great investment. But in terms of return on investment, dollar for dollar, even with most of the property along the line still in urban renewal districts, it's already returning cash on cash quite handsomely. And once all that property is put back on the tax rolls, as we've already done with 40% of the Pearl District, that return to the general good of the city, the county, and the school districts is going to be spectacular. $4.5 billion of new investment for a little over, $200 million of total public investment in the infrastructure itself. Pretty nice ROI. Warren Buffett should do so well. So the numbers are helpful. But so are the human impacts in the stories, and I'll retell my favorite story about the streetcar because it illustrates something that Dan mentioned in passing, which is there's a strange little anomaly that the streetcar seems to use its wheelchair lifts more than other forms of transit.
And that's because people with disabilities and older people who have mobility challenges have chosen to live along the streetcar line. And they can live well there. And the story is that I was in a coffee shop about 6 years ago, and Susan Emmons, the revered director of a local nonprofit that takes care of vulnerable older people, the Northwest Pilot Project, came up to me in the coffee shop and said, "Hey, Charlie, I need to finally confess that when the streetcar was being developed, I opposed it because I thought it was just an amenity for yuppies and that the city ought to be doing more to take care of vulnerable people." And now what I find as the director of the Northwest Pilot Project is that the streetcar is taking my clients to their doctor's appointments, to their jobs or their volunteer work, if they have that, to get to the grocery store. They're living a dignified and complete life because of that streetcar. And I'm here to tell you, I'm glad I didn't say anything public, and I'm eating my words, and thank you. And so there aren't too many times in this business when people that used to oppose something take the trouble to come back and say, "You know, I got it wrong, and I'm glad that the city did what it did." But Susan, of course, has the class to do just that, and that's what she did. But that's my favorite story, because I can see those older people that she's talking about who are living in affordable housing that we've worked hard to create, living a complete life because of this good thing that we've all done. So let's keep up the good work. Thank you very much. Aye.
Mayor Hales?
Yes.
I just want to state for the record, you had me with Susan Emmons and the ROI, but when you brought the Bull Run watershed into the discussion, I just want to state a respectful disagreement on that.
All right, we're going to smack down about which is a better public investment. I think we did pretty well on both counts.
If I might just add a comment, too, I really appreciate what you were saying about looking at the different lanes of travel and how do we separate. Commissioner Fish mentioned this, too, about how we look at the collision data and see could we separate. I had some comments yesterday about Williams. I think we should be looking at, should there be streets that are primarily for cyclists and transit and local access for cars only? Are there other streets that are mostly for automobiles and transit? If the more we can keep everybody safe while getting everybody where they need to go, I think that would be a better system. And we've already started doing that with the Tillicum Crossing being just for bikes, pets, and transit. Maybe there are other streets that we could look at, or maybe there are other lanes that, yes, cars can go in a streetcar lane, but do we really want them to be? Yes, cars can go on a street that a lot of cyclists use, but do we really want them to? And that's, I know you're looking at that, Commissioner, and I definitely support that.
Thank you. Yeah, that's a very important discussion. I'm glad you brought that up. Thank you. Okay, let's